What Women Must Know with Cheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show dedicated to empowering women with truthful information so they can make the most informed decisions possible regarding their health and well-being. And as always, I like to invite the men into the show as well because the information that is shared really is relevant for everybody. So I hope you're having a great pre-Christmas time, getting yourself organized together, planning to make this holiday time a most enjoyable, stress-free experience. I want to remind everyone that my website is whatwomenmustknow.com, and what I've provided and do my best to offer people is as much truthful information regarding particularly hormone health and well-being as I can find, and there's lots of information to share because there's always new important things that are happening in the world of women's health. If you opt in, you will get my special report on hormone myths and hormone truths. I have a special report on the adrenal glands. On my homepage, you can access all of the archive shows from this radio show and the radio show I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time called the Women's Healing Circle. And, you know, these are great shows, great opportunities to learn from experts, practitioners, authors, researchers, wise elders, because I've found in my life the way I've overcome the challenges that I've been presented with is to expand my knowledge and to keep learning. There are answers for everything, every condition, every challenge that we are going through in our life. There are answers, solutions, safe and effective ways to get ourselves back into harmony and balance. So what we need to do is just have an open mind and keep learning. So you can also access my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because not only will you continually get new information, I put all sorts of tips and things on that website directly, so you can just keep getting the snippets of information that is so critical for our health and well-being, particularly women's health. I just know that we as women get bombarded with so much information, and we're always trying to do the right things, but it's certainly a challenge to be able to decipher what's really truth, what's really fiction, and what most of all is really best for us. So that's what my work is about. I hope you'll take advantage of it. I have many, many free articles on my website. So go get yourself empowered with truthful information. And speaking about getting empowered with truthful information, I have a new series I've just started. It's a 6-week series. I have just sent out the second of 6 in-depth interviews on the subject of the Gardasil vaccine. We've heard a lot about the Gardasil vaccine in the last month or two, and that is the vaccine that is being promoted as the vaccine to reduce the incidence of cervical cancer. It's actually a vaccine for human papillomavirus, which is a very different story than preventing cervical cancer vaccine. And we need to know the truth about this vaccine, its risks, who it really is impacting, what it's impacting. Is it really necessary vaccine? There are just so many questions we have. So to help address it, and it's actually an expose about this vaccine, all the things we haven't been told about it. And again, it's there to help parents make the best decision regarding what choices they want for their children. So what you need to do is either opt in to What Women Must Know or just go to my Facebook page, become a friend, and that will be sent to you on a weekly basis over the next month or perhaps a little bit more. We'll see how many more interviews we're going to be including in that series. So this is just part of the way I'm doing my part in getting some really good information out there for you. Okay, so having said all of that, I want to talk about our conversation today. You know, we are here, it's winter, we're rapidly approaching the solstices, the darkest time of the year. We're also, of course, in high gear for Christmas and then New Year's Eve, which is the highlight of our winter season. And these seasonal celebrations are always involved with a range of behaviors and emotions for a variety of reasons. And so we're going to be exploring all of this in today's conversation. We're talking to Dr. John Sharp, who's the author of the book, The Emotional Calendar, Understanding Seasonal Influences and Milestones to Become Happier, More Fulfilled, and in Control of Your Life. And it's great to have Dr. Sharp with us today because he has written a wonderful book. He is a psychiatrist and neuropsychiatrist who serves on the medical staff at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. He is on the faculty at Harvard Medical School and at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, and he divides his time between Boston and LA. What fun. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. John Sharp to the show. Hello, Dr. Sharp.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, great.
You must have been worried
for the holidays, Dr. Sharp.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, it's just such a delight to have you here. This is such an interesting book, and it's a really appropriate time of the year to be talking about the emotional calendar and what goes on, which is a topic I'm really interested in and have, in my own way, been following and trying to adjust my life and my diet and schedule.
Good for you. Good season. For you.
Yeah, you know, I've been aware of it. I think Chinese medicine really opened my eyes to the relationship we have with these wonderful cycles that we go through, and since we are
that are completely natural, and that,
yeah.
I think you're right. If we tune into more, we can be more present with, we can work with more successfully, and literally become more happy and in control of our life.
You know, I think that's so true, and it's all about getting into alignment and balance with all of these cycles, isn't it?
It is, and I don't want your listeners to think that you've got to be, you know, perfect at this, because it's really too hard to get perfectly right all the time. But by working at it, by making little changes, by being more aware of what those changes can offer, you can make a big difference. That's what I find.
You know, here's a question I want to start off with, Dr. Sharp. You're a psychiatrist and a neuropsychiatrist. You are, as I said, on the medical staff at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. You're involved with the medical school at Harvard, with UCLA. I mean, those are prestigious organizations, and obviously you're highly qualified and credentialed. But this is a topic that's a little kind of out of the box when it comes to how psychiatrists look at things, don't you think?
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about it, is that I have these wonderful credentials. I was really blessed to have a tremendous education and tremendous inspiration into medicine. My grandfather was a family doctor, and I used to go on house calls with him after dinner. We'd go off into the country, and I remember sitting at the kitchen table where some relative would feed me a piece of pie while he'd go take care of the sick one. And I got some amazing just exposure to the healing, the vibe, the something about the relationship that was happening, and that's what inspired me into medicine. So even though I'm in a very brainy place, I came into it with a lot of heart, and I think that's what made me kind of have a more broad-minded perspective to write this book about.
Well, tell me why did you focus on this area of the emotional calendar, as you call it? What brought that to your attention? You know, why has this become kind of a focus of what you're out there speaking about?
Well, you know where you find the best inspiration, don't you? Is in your own life. And that certainly is true for me. I very simply noticed at the end of one summer, as I write about actually in the introduction to the emotional calendar, I noticed that I was a bit of a grump. I was there in a beautiful spot the last week of August entertaining my cousin who was visiting with her family, and they had this one week to enjoy the summer, and they were ready to rent bikes and go out for ice cream and have barbecues and linger on the beach. But for me, it was too late to really be enjoying those kinds of pleasures. I was thinking about the classes I had to get ready to teach and the fall and back to school. I've always been kind of a lean into it kind of person. Sally's always been kind of a lingerer. So I noticed how strongly seasonal cues were affecting me different than they were affecting her. You know, she felt that cool kind of ness in the breeze at the end of the day and felt like reinvigorated by it. And I thought, oh my gosh, we shouldn't have been on the beach in the first place. You know, she had one kind of emotional reaction to her sensory experience, and I had another. And I just, a light bulb went off, realized, wow, you know, people are really affected very differently. Of course, it's so obvious now. And there's something about this concept, the emotional calendar that we keep. And if we could look at it, you know, the way we look at our planning for the week or the season and so many other senses, and incorporate the senses and how they make us feel, we'd have a much fuller idea of what to expect.
So let's look at this emotional calendar, and we can start right now. We are in just about the depths of winter, at least in terms of the amount of light that we receive. And, of course, we also have the holiday component of this calendar. So I think that's a good place for us to start in exploring the season, what goes on, and what do we need to know to support our health and well-being and becoming happier and balanced at this time of our life. And then we can go around the calendar, Dr. Sharp. How does that sound?
Perfect. And, of course, we're starting in the present, which is always a good idea. And like you say, the present is right here in the deep of winter. I mean, actually, meteorologically, it's not yet, but, you know, we're certainly feeling it. And it's almost the time when there's the least amount of sunlight, which is a big, big determinant in terms of wintry kind of tired feeling that oftentimes comes along with a lot of kind of stress when we want to be feeling better. So let's back up one step, and let me just say that the smart thing to do, the sensitized thing to do for women, for men, for everybody, is to look at each season as its own unique world. So with its own colors and textures and tastes and smells, and, you know, you want to try to really embrace that fact. The seasons are really very different. It's not like we're all living in a mall, although even malls get seasonal this time of year, as you know, and try to figure out what the season is all about. So this time of year, we have obviously colder temperatures and less sunlight. So in the physical realm, ask yourself, you know, everybody listening should ask themselves, do these factors seem to be relevant for me? And you know what? There are some people who would say no, who would say, you know what? I don't really mind the fact that the long winter nights are here. I don't really mind the fact that it's darker sooner in the afternoon. It doesn't matter to me. I'm almost impervious. But most people, upon reflection, would say, no, actually, you know what? It's harder to make plans in the late afternoon. It's harder to feel revived, to get a second wind at all. You know, I just want to go snuggle. I just want to go nest. And maybe that's the thing to do some days, and maybe other days you got to resist that and be very determined and get out, even if you don't feel like it, to do yourself a favor. So you ask yourself first, how does light affect me? How does temperature affect me? And what can I do about it? That's one thing. Just two more things. The other thing is ask yourself, what about all these man-made seasonal activities that come to us either from the culture, you know, from religious expectations, some sense of what we should be doing that we're living with? You know, how much does the Christmas, Hanukkah season affect you? And again, some people may say, you know what, almost doesn't matter to me. I see it on TV, I hear it in the radio, but I don't really care. And other people say, oh, it reminds me of what I should be doing and how important this time is and how wonderful it is or how stressful it is. So ask yourself, what is the kind of man-made cultural expectation of the season doing for you? And the third and final realm is your past experience. You know, what have you been conditioned to expect based on how it's been for you in the past, either when you were a kid or when you were a younger adult or recently? You know, if you had a big surprise that was positive, a big success, something happened that was really great, in years past, it's likely to make you feel like that's likely to happen again, or something that you'd like to have happen again, or you just might feel good because it happened once. But if it was a negative thing, you know, a lot of times we have the anniversary of some kind of a disappointment or loss or something that shook us up, and that can also come back and you know, kind of haunt us a little bit when the same seasonal triggers come into play. So you have these three realms: physical, man-made cultural, and past experience. And you look and you see what you can expect so that you can know, you know, what your winter time is going to be like. For most people, like you say, it's a very emotional time of year where there's a lot of sense of expectation, where we're, you know, busier than normal. We might not have as much energy as we normally do. And like you say, the end of the year, it's like a big lead up that is a long haul for us to race towards.
You know, I've found a couple of things with winter, and since we are in winter, we can give it a little more time to explore some of those realms you talked about. First of all, you know, what I learned from my studies in Chinese medicine is that winter is really a time of renewal, and it's very restorative. So just like the energy has gone down to the roots, and the, you know, the leaves have fallen, all the energy is being stored and held, and in a sense it's being focused at the very core of one's essence.
Beautiful. As opposed to death and decay. It's not just death and decay, which is what some people think, you know, because it seems that way. The leaves are bare. But like you say, the energy is down at the roots.
Exactly. And it's preparing for, it's like this cauldron of recreation. And so for me, winter is a time where I enjoy, first of all, slowing down, sleeping more, making sure I have warming foods, and also it's a bit more, you know, dreamy, right? It's an inner, which, well, it used to be. I mean, of course, now we've got 24/7 lights and activities and music and everything else, but it used to be a time where we would go within, we would quiet down, we would be more reflective and kind of give birth or prepare for these dreams of this new energy that will emerge in the spring. So I always enjoy that quiet, introverted time in winter where I generally do more writing, do more, you know, inner focused things, not so much externalized, or at least making sure I have time to rest, because this is where we, and again, according to the Chinese model, we are rejuvenating and regenerating our kidney energy. This is the very energy of our life force, of our essence.
Good for you, Cheryl. I will, as a fancy Harvard and UCLA doctor, tell you that you're on the right track. That makes so much sense. It sounds so right on. And you know what it reminds me of is that before we, you know, get into like the more official, more obvious renewal of the spring, because, you know, springtime typically people think of as renewal, there's a much, much more important period before it's kind of obvious, which is when really a lot of the work happens, and I think that's winter. And studies have really shown that, you know, if you're going to change and do anything, it's that time before you really take action, when you're like contemplating it, when you're just kind of gathering your strength and your energy, that makes all the critical difference in terms of how things turn out in the long haul. So people should look at the winter as an opportunity, like you say, to kind of rest and nurture yourself and regroup. And there's nothing wrong with you know, getting some extra sleep and, you know, having a chance to wear some warm clothes and turn the thermometer maybe up 1 degree or two, or sit by a fire and read and, you know, nurture yourself and kind of get that essential sense of, you know, what's in you kind of to love and to allow to, you know, come forth and thrive in the springtime.
Because that really is the most inner time, we've drawn more inwards in winter than any other season of the year.
Absolutely. So right after New Year's, for example, if you haven't had a chance to take a break yet, great time to do it. You know, those first few weeks of January, there's not a whole lot going on. A lot of people feel like there should be, or somehow they're sort of wound up from all that there was going on leading up to the New Year's. I think, like you say, it's a great time to really take a chance to regroup and just do some good things for yourself, whether it's, you know, go get a manicure or sleep or get a massage or, you know, get on the yoga mat some more. I don't mean to be a nut about going to the gym and trying to pretend like your New Year's resolutions are things that you're going to slave to all year long. And not that. I just mean be, you know, kind and nurturing to yourself exactly as you suggest. You can do it now, and you can do it certainly through January. January is a great month for that.
So the other question I have, and you're the perfect person as a psychiatrist, a neuropsychiatrist, why is it that there's a relationship between light, the amount of light we're exposed to, and the incidence of depression during winter? Well, what do we need to know, and how do we bolster ourselves against the risk of kind of, you know, falling into that depressive state or
more
depression?
It's so true. You know, when I was researching the emotional calendar, when I would talk about it even just with friends or colleagues, the first thought that people usually have when they hear me talk about the emotional calendar is, oh, you're talking about seasonal affective disorder. You're talking about that effect of decreased sunlight on our mood and depression. And I said, yeah, it's the tip of the iceberg, but there's a lot more to the emotional calendar. We can talk about things all season long, season by season, all year long. But yeah, you're right. The clearest association of all is that, and you can just look at the prevalence of seasonal affective disorder, which is a seasonal period of feeling sad and tired and wanting to sleep more, maybe being a little irritable and not enjoying yourself as much. It's kind of like a mild depression. I mean, not so mild that you don't notice. It's bad enough, but it's not the worst kind of depression either. A kind of mid-level depression that's associated with a lack of sunlight. And you can look at the prevalence of that as you get away from the equator. There's no SAD on the equator, for example, where days and nights are the same summer and winter. But the farther up you go, like, for example, there's more in North Carolina than in Florida. There's more in Maine than North Carolina. The farther north you go, the longer those winter nights are, the more the population, up to about 30-40%, actually suffer from either clinical or subclinical seasonal affective disorder. And the treatment is light. You can get light therapy in a light box that's very affordable. A good place, by the way, to check this out is the Center for Environmental Therapeutics, which is out of Columbia University. It's CET.org. And they're very good, you know, nonprofit, a lot of good information on their website. And you can even see, like, what some of the choices are in buying light boxes. You buy them, they look like a computer monitor. They're actually quite small and light, and they last, the bulbs, about 5 years. So you can plug them in, turn it on. You have to turn it on. And in the morning, when you're looking at your schedule, looking at the paper, or listening to the radio, or whatever you're doing, you can have it shine on your face for about 20 minutes. 20 or 30 minutes is all you need. And then go about your business, and you get a boost. And after one use, you feel it. And after maybe 10 days of successive use every day, you really do feel like you've pretty much treated your condition. So if you can't go to the equator, you can bring light to you. And you can use that from September, October, all the way till we change the clocks, all the way till April.
Is that true for just any type of full-spectrum light bulb? Can you replace your normal light bulbs with full-spectrum light bulbs in your home?
You can't really, because you need to have a certain intensity. So you're right, it should be full-spectrum, not the burning rays, obviously. But it's got to be a certain strength. And light strength is measured in units called lux, just like watts or volts. Light strength is in lux, L-U-X. And what you need is 10,000 lux, which is a pretty darn bright thing about 2 feet away from your face. So if you had like lights all over the house or overhead lights, they'd have to be like blazingly powerful to give you that. You could, but it's do is to buy a light box, put it on your desk or on a counter, and use it in the morning. And it really, really works. It really, really does work.
Do you know why some people are more susceptible, excuse me, than others?
That's such an interesting question, probably a whole other show. But there are some people that have a kind of a increased sensitivity to, by the way, not just this in particular, but all kinds of things. People who are more sensitive to changes in barometric pressure, people who are more likely to get, you know, migraine headaches. There's a whole kind of a cluster of, we think it's genetic, increased sensitivity markers, which... So that's actually not a bad way to think about it. If you just notice, you know, if one of your listeners just notices that she's, you know, actually kind of more sensitive than other people, it seems, you know, more vulnerable to feeling out of sorts, then probably she's more likely to have, you know, the seasonal affective vulnerability too. But, you know, you just have to look back and say year after year, you know, looking back on my life, looking back over the past 5 years, does it seem that there's a pattern that in the winter I feel kind of down, sad, irritable, that I just don't have as much energy or enjoyment in things, I don't feel psyched like I find that I normally feel in the summer? Because there's so many things that factor in. There's all kinds of variables. It's not just one moving piece here. But if it seems like that pattern exists, these light boxes usually have like 90-day money-back guarantees. You can buy one. Try it out and see if it works for you. It's pretty risk-free.
I mean, that's such a great alternative because it's safe, it's, you know, inexpensive, and certainly helps everyone who may be sensitive to the light feel so much better. And it's you know, it's a non-invasive approach.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm hesitant to say this, but I will anyway. Is that if anyone is making the mistake of using indoor tanning, of going to tanning salons, which, you know, obviously the dermatologists jump up and down and admonish us from doing, you can get a similar kind of boost from the brightness of those lights, even though your eyes are closed. So another like clue is that anyone who used to do indoor tanning, if they felt a kind of a, you know, impervious to the cold and darkness after they got done, if they felt a boost there, that could be a suggestion that that getting a non-tanning light box would give you a similar kind of feel.
Okay, well, you know, we're going to take a little break, and Dr. Sharp, we'll be back so we can go around the calendar and talk about all the different seasons. A few more things I have
about
winter, so don't go away, and I don't want any of my listeners to go away because this is a really fascinating conversation. You're listening to What Women Must Know. I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman. Stay tuned. We will be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and today we're having a fascinating conversation about the emotional calendar, how to understand seasonal influences that may be affecting your health and wealth and well-being and the whole thing. And my guest today is Dr. John Sharp. He is a psychiatrist and neuropsychiatrist that serves both on the staff, the medical staff at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, and also he's on the Harvard Medical School staff and works with the David Geffen School of Medicine, UCLA. So he's busy flying back and forth. And we were talking about the various seasons. We've been spending a little more time on winter since that's where we are. And a couple of questions I want to ask you, Dr. Sharp. What about the role of vitamin D and its place with helping to stave off depression during the winter? Do you see any relationship?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we didn't used to pay too much attention to vitamin D until recently. And now, I mean, in terms of the effect of sunlight and vitamin D and depression, so what we know is that if you don't get any sunlight at all, you can actually become deficient in vitamin D. It gets activated by the sun. You need about a square foot of skin exposed to the sunshine for about 10 minutes is all you need. So even in the wintertime, you can put your face out when it's sunny or roll up your sleeves at lunch and get all the fixin' that you ought to be getting.
Hmm.
What that does is it allows vitamin D to actually convert to an active form, and what that does is to help keep your bones strong, keep your metabolism healthy, and It doesn't directly affect mood, actually, but it does help you with a kind of a sense of strength and just knowing that you're taking good care of yourself. You can get a blood test next time you're having a checkup, and your doctor may anyway want to go ahead and check vitamin D levels, which we never used to do, and see how you're doing in that department, Cheryl.
And I think that's really important. I recommend all the people that I work with get their vitamin D levels tested. I think it's a good marker to have.
Yeah, it's easy. And if you're getting stuck anyway for other things, it's no problem to check and see what your vitamin D is all about.
And the other thing I was going to ask you, and that's about 5-HTP, because often that's recommended as a solution for people who are suffering with SAD, the SAD syndrome. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, that's very interesting. I have not seen the evidence base for that. I don't know either way whether it's strongly supported or not. I haven't heard great things about it, but I think it's very safe, you know, and something that certainly could be considered as part of a overall set of remedies. Have you had better direct knowledge about that than I?
For some people, it seems to really help that 5-HTP, which is a precursor to serotonin, which is your natural antidepressant,
yep.
for people
yep.
listening, you know, that may be an issue for some people. Certainly worth exploring. And
absolutely.
It is safe. You said something else that's in your book, The Emotional Calendar, that's really interesting, and that is that at wintertime people tend to abuse alcohol or at least drink more. Is that a seasonal thing? Is it related to the energy of winter, or is it related to the fact that we just have more parties and celebrations at wintertime?
Well, I think there is clearly an alcohol seasonality. So in all the different cultures you could go and check out, you'll see this. It's not just here. And I think it's true that partaking in alcohol is often part of, you know, family gatherings or you know, work parties or end-of-the-year parties. You can certainly choose to say no. You can certainly choose to be abstinent. You can have a soda or some non-alcoholic punch, and no one's going to look at you cross-eyed. But I think the most important determinant is the kind of boredom that some people feel and the lack of outdoor opportunities that some people feel. You know, I know for myself, when I'm leaving the office at 4:30 or 5 or 5:30 or 6 o'clock at night, I start really early, but I get done, you know, I think relatively early as well, and it's dark outside. Boy, I could go sit and talk with you and have a glass of wine or something stronger, but I tell myself, I'm gonna have plans that I've already made, and I'm going to, you know, whatever they are, go meet somebody or go to the gym or run an errand, and I'm going to, you know, be active. And if I am going to choose to have some alcohol, I'm going to wait and not have more and not start earlier. I think people have more and start earlier, in part just because of that lack of sunlight.
Right. So we have to be careful because too much alcohol can lead to depression.
Depression and all kinds of troubles. You know, I think you have to really be honest about that with yourself. You know, we know that addiction is in part genetically driven. If you are an addict, you ought to know it so that you can stay clear of addictive substances. And if you're not an addict, then you want to be careful that you don't overindulge just because, you know, you started earlier or there's more alcohol around or it seems like everyone's doing nothing but drinking. It's not true that everyone's doing nothing but drinking, but it can seem that way sometimes, especially in the wintertime.
So it's almost like a more at-risk time for those people.
It is. It really is. You know, we'll get to summertime, but summertime is a more at-risk time for guess what, for promiscuous sexual behavior. You know, not that I'm a prude, but, you know, people running around and wearing less and feeling more carefree, and, you know, there are certain risks, if you will, associated with that season. So the risk associated with the wintertime and all that hunkering down is drinking too much and being too isolated and being depressed and not thinking that there's something you can do about it. So I think feeling empowered to, you know, shed some light on this question of what is affecting me this winter and see what can you do about, you know, what you think is the likely cause. And then put that plan into motion and then look back again in a week or so and see if you're feeling differently. These little changes that are just based on awareness can make such a big difference in how you feel.
Okay, I think we've done a good job on winter. Is there anything else that you want to add before we move around the calendar?
just one general point, which would apply to all the different seasons as well, which is this. You don't have to spread your energy. Let's say you have a certain amount of energy for the day or for the week or for the season. You don't have to spread it out evenly, you know, an equal amount to today as tomorrow, or to one activity right now as to another. You can apportion your energy the way you see fit. You know, people forget that. So you should look at this, say, period between now and New Year's. Figure out what you like the look of, what you want to put more energy into, and, you know, kind of focus your energy on what you think is going to be in your best interest. And if there's stuff that you just have to kind of deal with or work through or work around that's not so, I don't know, appealing for you, or that's not going to be so good for you, give that less energy. You know, try to find a way to apportion your energy in a way that's consistent with your own best interest. It's especially important, I think, now, between now and New Year's, to try to get that right.
Yeah, that's great information. And, okay, let's move on. Let's go to spring. People love spring. Spring is such a great energy, of the energy rising up again in us.
Absolutely. Like we were talking about in terms of, you know, renewal. I mean, it's a great time, and it's easier to wake up with a charge and to keep that going all day long. But you know what I found is that spring fever is real. If you look across cultures, you will definitely find that there's a kind of a restive energy. In other words, a kind of restlessness, like not sure what to do with it. You know, should I change something? Should I change where I live, or change who I'm living with, or change my job? Or what should I? People feel a kind of uncomfortable restlessness sometimes in the early spring with all that energy bubbling up. And it can actually lead to a lot of trouble. You'll be surprised to hear that if you look around the whole year and ask the question, when does suicide peak? Peaks in April. Which
that's
is
so interesting.
Really interesting. And I think it has to do with this increase in restive energy, people who were maybe depressed for the winter, and then all of a sudden they get all energized and they don't really feel comfortable and don't know what to do, and may reach a point of hopelessness or impulsivity. So you've got to harness that energy of spring is the point, and you've got to put it to good use. And generally, that's easy to do. Generally, that's a pleasure to do. It's something that we all look forward to, spring.
Is there anything that you recommend to get in harmony with the energies of spring? Is it just getting out and connecting with nature and all the flowers and leaves about to bloom, and just kind of have that awareness of this emerging new life that's happening around us?
That is the easiest thing, for sure. I remember I used to have the privilege of spending a lot of time in the summer on a little island called Nantucket off the coast of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And the island goes very quiet between December and April. And in April, when the daffodils come up, they have a very quaint little festival, Daffodil Festival, where the summer stores open just for the weekend, and there's a whole little daffodil parade where people can walk around and get outside and see these early spring flowers. And I tell you, it's a chance to kind of preview what's to come and get you in touch and in tune with what you can look forward to. So I think just trying to find a way to do that, whether you know, change a little bit about what colors you're wearing, change a little bit about what you're eating, maybe you've taken a spring kind of break of one kind or another. You know, you just kind of lighten it up and start getting excited about the coming of the warmer, gentler, easier time of the year that most people associate with very positively. And if you don't, then, you know, you really ought to call someone like me or get some help from, you know, someone such as yourself who can try to figure out why not.
Right. And you know, in a naturopathic tradition and with Chinese medicine as well, the spring as well as the fall are the ideal times to detoxify the body. So I always find that interesting. It's like the most appropriate time to support the body in this cleansing of the old and preparing for these
cleansing
new...
Cleansing and renewal go well together, don't they?
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so we can go down to our promiscuous time.
So, yes, spring leads to summer, and The one funny thing about spring, I just want to say, is that, you know, a lot of times people who are allergic, you know, to the pollen in the air and all that's kind of coming out, budding on trees and grass and flowers, might have a real, you know, problem with being happy and energetic if they have a, you know, clogged head and just feel a little bit out of it. Allergies are significant. Even people who haven't had allergies badly as kids can grow into that in a way that you know, you got to stop and think, oh, yeah, maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe I'm just dealing with some seasonal allergies. It kind of like is a bridge to get across as you move into the summer.
You know, can I just say something? Because you brought up a really good point, Dr. Sharp. I think a lot of people have as much a trepidation around the spring as much as they look forward to it. There's trepidation if you are a sufferer of hay fever. And I used to have really, really bad hay fever. So the spring would, the joy of spring would be dampened by suffering.
That's what I'm saying. It's really something, you know, because we love the spring and the feeling and the promise of it. But then if we have a, you know, clogged up head or we're tired or something, it gets in the way.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's the role of maybe a detox. I could say healed my allergies because I explored why they were occurring and kind of getting to the deeper cause. But it would ruin many a vacation for me.
Oh, yeah. Good for you. Absolutely. It's so smart to recognize that that was relevant and that there's something you could do about it.
Right.
So when the summer comes, you know, when the spring is leading on to summer, we all know from, I think, our many years in school that there's an expectation of a real vacation, a real time away from our customary worries. I mean, a lot of times in the summer you go and you have other worries instead of the ones that you were used to in school. You have some other kinds that you have to deal with, but it still seems like a vacation when you get there. The problem is that, you know, most of us as grown-ups these days don't have anything like a summer vacation from like a child's point of view. You know, child's point of view would be that summer vacation is long and carefree, you know, and many of us kind of still feel like it ought to be that way, but it's really not. You know, grown-ups have to work, and we don't get as much time off. Maybe we only get a short vacation or a working vacation. Maybe we don't feel like we can even afford to take much of a vacation at all. So the trick, you know, in the summertime is to harness that kind of summery energy. And again, you can do that in terms of what you're eating and, you know, long, tall glasses of lemonade and iced tea and, you know, maybe some mint from the garden. And, you know, you try to get yourself in a summery mode, even if you're just taking a half a day off, you know, some weekends to make it a little long for yourself. So you got to try to find a way to enjoy the pleasures of summer to whatever extent you're able.
And, I mean, I think that's so important because the summer, with all that sunlight and the warmth, just whatever other energies are associated with summer, it's such a time to feel open, expansive, connected to the energies of the earth. And if we're not taking advantage of it, if we're locked up in an office building or staying inside, somehow we are disconnecting ourselves from a healing force.
So true. And, you know, even if your work is long hours indoors and, you know, you can't do better than get out, you know, at the very end of the day, you can still change into shorts and flip-flops and, you know, go have a picnic or, you know, make some plans to take a nice walk while the sun's setting so late and do things that are summery to embrace the season. And it gives you a lightness, I think, of being. It's not measured in the amount of days. You know, having more and more days like that doesn't necessarily make you feel better. It's really more about just the quality of the time that you can snag for yourself.
And always making sure you get your feet in the sand or on the earth, on the grass, so we are truly connecting with those earth energies.
Oh, absolutely. I try not to wear socks in the summertime. My patients laugh at me when they see my bare ankles. And they say, what's the matter,
Doc? You have your
suit
on and then your flip-flops.
Yep. But I'll have no socks and loafers in my suit on. Makes me feel like I'm participating in summer a little bit, even though, even though I'm sitting in my office trying to help someone. And
we didn't talk about the role of flowers. I'm talking about cut flowers and plants, and maybe we should just kind of mention that as well. Even if you can't get out and spend much time outside, the role that plants and flowers have in helping us.
Oh, you're so right. You know, anything that is sort of seasonal that you can use in terms of decorating your, you know, environment is, in my mind, a good idea. You know, if you love that sort of thing, you can do a lot of it. If you just want to have a little nod to it, I think that's wonderful, too. I for example, am going out to Los Angeles for Christmas, and I have a little apartment there, and it's all very kind of L.A. style, kind of white and beach-colored wood and not really too seasonal, actually. And what I do is I just have like a seasonal plant or a little seasonal decoration, or maybe change the throw pillow, you know, from a summer color to a winter and back to summer. And just a little highlight like that makes all the difference in the place.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Absolutely a wonderful idea. So flowers, you know, which have smell and color, nature in your home, you know, are probably such a wonderful, easy thing to do. Being seasonal that way can, you know, you don't have to become quite as complicated as Martha Stewart sometimes recommends that we become. Just a little something makes a world of difference.
Okay, well, we'll have some time to come to the end for autumn, which is one of my favorite seasons, I have to say.
Me too, and there are two kinds of people, people like us who kind of love that back-to-school energy. It's like in a lining of energy. The summer's energy is all kind of spread out and all over the place, and there's a kind of alignment of energy in the fall, which is wonderful. But there are others who never really like that back-to-school thing, and I mean, it helps if you were successful in the classroom, if you were successful on the playing field, if you were successful in the, you know, hallways. If you had success in school in the fall, you can look forward to the fall. Even if you did, you might be a lingerer summer person who just wants to, like, catch that last, you know, barbecue on the beach like my cousin and kind of never come in until after it gets dark. So if you're one person or the other type, it's good to know it. It's one of my big messages. And generally, the fall is about industry. It's about getting things done, lining things up and knocking them down. It's about, you know, feeling good about putting your socks back on, in my case, or, you know, running out and building the first fire, you know, in the fireplace later on in the fall. So you can look forward to the crispness and the efficiency, you know, and the productivity of the early fall, especially. It's painless. It's a painless time. You just have to, you know, enjoy doing things and feel good as a result.
You know, there was something you said when we were talking about the emotional calendar. So we have the actual energies of the season and then the holidays. And then there's the, which caught my attention, was the sports thing. You know, so now we're in the middle of, I guess, what, New Year's Day is the big football championship, pardon me.
Yeah, you know, I look at the seasons as early, then deep, and then the waning period. So this is the deep part of the NFL season, that's for sure.
And this can really have huge emotional impact on people, one way or the other.
Even if you're not a football fan, you know, your man might be, or you might be, and he might not be. You know, it really is something which is dominant in our culture now. I did a piece last year for ABC on how to prepare for the end of the NFL season, like what to do when there's no more Sunday football.
You know, I know people who have such strong allegiances to their team that if their team loses, they go into a deep depressive spin. What's that about, Dr. Sharp? I don't understand it.
That's just affiliation, you know. That's just getting affiliated with something, which is good. It's always good to root for your team, you know, whether your team is your family or whether it's, you know, your kid's sports team or whether it's the NFL. You know, you root for your team, you feel this kinship, and it moves you, and you really care. By the way, what I said on ABC last year is if you just take a look at the Pro Bowl, you see all the players, it's now played before the Super Bowl, so you see all the players who really aren't you know, winning the Super Bowl, who are out of contention for it, out in Hawaii, having a heck of a good time, and managing to get over it just fine. So I say, hey, if they can do it, why can't we?
So any things that we should do or be aware of, or for people who do have that tendency, what's your best solution?
Yeah, well, the best solution is to recognize that, you know, you're a fan, and, you know, you'll soon have something else to, you know, become connected to, and you just have to, like, temporarily kind of disconnect. And, you know, it's kind of like you're a little sailboat and you love being tied up in the harbor and all the kind of fun things the harbor offers. Well, sometimes, you know, you have to go and you cut all the lines and you take off, and for a while you don't see any land. That may be a little unnerving, but you want to remember, you know what, this is a wonderful opportunity to be between things. And the next thing you know, you'll see some more land. You get all tied up and squared away over there and secure as a bug in a rug, and you'll be happy again.
And should people just who have that tendency look for something that catches their fancy, that they can get involved with and have some meaningful relationship with? Do you recommend things like that?
That's a very knowing question. Yes, and it absolutely does not have to be sports. I definitely think, and my patients who feel lonely and who don't feel like anyone really is like them or understands them, need to be, you know, gently, but I would say strongly encouraged to find other people who share some interests, or discover an interest in yourself. You know, try out different things. Find some other people who turn out to be interested in whatever you turn out to be interested into, and, you know, hang out with them. It's so easy now, you know, facilitated by the internet. You know, you can support your own interests, but it's good to get in the same room with other people who enjoy whatever it is, poetry or music, or reading from an author, you know, or listening to intelligent radio and talking about it. You're going to see movies, or, you know, there's so many things, going out for dinner or tea. You know, you don't have to spend a lot of money, but you can find other people who have similar interests to yours. And if you don't think you have any interests, then, you know, it's not true. You just have to make sure you're not depressed, and then figure out what it is you might be interested in, and have a little courage and show up somewhere, and then make yourself a regular, and then talk to other people who you see who seem to have the same interest developing that you do.
Dr. Sharp, if people want to get your book, The Emotional Calendar, is it best to go to Amazon? Is that what you would recommend? Or is it in bookstores?
Yes, it's coming out actually in paperback December 20th. You can get it on my website, johnsharpmd.com. You can get it up at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And if you want to follow me and hear some of this wisdom on Twitter, my Twitter handle is johnsharpmd, J-O-H-N-S-H-A-R-P-M-D.
Dr. Sharp, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. I wish you all the best on your emotional calendar ride.
You're a generous host. Thank you for all this time. I appreciate it. All the best to you this winter.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas in L.A.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to What Women Must Know. My special guest today is Dr. John Sharp, author of The Emotional Calendar, Understanding Seasonal Influences and Milestones to Become Happier, More Fulfilled, and in Control of Your Life. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.